Anne and I are good friends, former colleagues, and she actually was a participant when I was running a parenting seminar on how to love and give your kids logic, hopefully, and develop them into thriving adults. Today, we actually talk about something that's quite similar. It's how to manage talent in yourself, in the people that you lead, and in the organizations that you're a part of. You'll learn some like theories here and how we actually take our research and apply them in the real world. And you also hear that we are thinking quite deliberately as we go along. I'm excited to actually share that I had an insight during this podcast that I'm still very much aware of and having an impact in my life. Am I managing my own talent effectively? There are many days when I have this little aha that I'm not. So I hope that you also have a powerful learning moment in this podcast. I know I did.
Welcome to the Executive Shaman Podcast, where Dr. Crystal White and her comrades guide us to bring more wholeness, energy, and connectivity to our professions. We're ready, Crystal. Get us started.
Welcome, Anne.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you. First, I just like talking to you. We've already been talking for about an hour, and then we just decided to do the podcast. So I really am in a better mindset after every time I get to sit down with you. At the Executive Shaman Podcast, I always ask every guest, what do you really do for a living?
So what I really do for a living is I do research in focusing on people within pain, but I do that in a setting of a team the team is composed of other researchers and clinical nurse experts who apply research to practice. And then together as a team, we help to answer tough questions for the executive group and help them to make decisions based on evidence and research and science to have the best outcome for our patients and for the team as a whole.
I know. Isn't that question like always, every time I ask it and have to answer it, I'm always like, what do I do? Especially if I'm not actually making a living right now, or if we're like in the setting, for example, we are in public right now, and just the public setting of what we do professionally is awkward.
And I think I've answered the question differently every time I've been asked.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've asked you multiple times. And in groups, I see leaders actually evolving their self-awareness when they ask the question. But the context always adds a different flavor to our response. Mm-hmm. So in this situation, listeners, we are in public. You might hear some awkward sounds or things that we can't really control here. But the conversation, I promise, is intentional. So why do you say yes to this podcast?
I said yes first because you asked me, and I was honored to be asked and part of this new adventure in your life. And also because I'm at a point of transition and learning new things about myself and what I want to do. And this is something that would not normally be comfortable for me. It's not comfortable for me. And so I figured if it's something that's not comfortable, I should say yes.
Last week, I was talking to a 17-year-old, and she said, hey, Crystal, what do you recommend for pushing me outside my comfort zone? Because a teacher had told her that this is a good thing to do. And Julie and I talked about this in an earlier episode of the podcast. I think it was episode 2, that pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone can actually catalyze growth for you. So if an intention is growth, to find an opportunity where you could push yourself out of the comfort zone, that works. But really what you just have to do is wait for the opportunity to find you.
Yeah. And spending time with you, they're multiple and frequent.
I am provocative. I would say that I believe that. So one of the things that we'll talk about today is how do you work with other people in a way that manages their talent. So even the people that I am honored to have these conversations with is a way for me to manage their talent. I see something in them and I want to amplify it. I want to have fun and I want to catalyze awareness and education or entertainment for listeners. So this is in and of itself, doing the podcast as a way to like look at your talent as a leader and to manage it for a very specific aim. So how do you approach talent management on your own team?
So I am fortunate enough to lead a small team of mature, professional, just amazingly strong leaders. And it's a way different method than if you had a group of younger, less mature individuals that you're leading. So I think the key for me in this current team that I'm in and leading is just really knowing each person individually and how they interact with each other and with the team as a whole. And then finding things that work and sometimes being wrong, sometimes trying things and it doesn't work, but being able to learn from that. I think that's just the biggest foundational thing, is really knowing your people and knowing how they work and what motivates them.
What helped you along the way define that approach more deliberately?
Well, first of all, I feel really fortunate to lead the team that I do, which is a small team, which works for me, of really mature professionals. And I think I've had to take a different approach than if I was leading more junior individuals. But the key for me, and it works well in this setting where it's a small group, is really just to know the most I can about the individual, what motivates them, how they learn best, and then how they interact together and as how we interact as a whole team. So when we bring people onto the team, we do things like strength finder and different temperament assessments to really get an idea and a picture of who this person is, what they're motivated by. And then we talk about it as a group. So there's no, there's kind of no secrets. Like, we all kind of know, and I'm also very transparent with how I operate and what works best for me and what my challenges and struggles are. So we all kind of learn from each other in this, and then we try things, and sometimes they don't work and sometimes they do. And so I think we have a really good setup for kind of continuous feedback as well. And the team has changed a lot over the past several years. And so we just adapt, based on the individuals.
So the thing about having a talent management strategy is, first and foremost, you can't manage your talent if you don't know what they're talented in. And you can't manage them if you really don't want to see them grow. So there's a couple things about talent management. Is if you are trying to build your talent, then you need to know where they're at. And then second, you really need to know where you want them to go and where they want to go. And it's a struggle to do that if you don't know what makes them tick. And I love how you have successfully onboarded your people from the beginning to have a language where this is your strength, this is maybe a weakness, this is what kind of motivates you, what are some of your core operating needs. Your teammates always know if they're introverts or extroverts, and you use those needs very, very seamlessly, like into the fabric of your team's culture.
For sure.
And then also, like, you know, this is where their strengths need to be stretched in outside their current level of proficiency. And what you said about your having a more mature or professional team is that they really are lifelong learners and they love asking questions. They're researchers, yes. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they like hypothesis testing in general. So that was pretty natural for you to scaffold them in that way. But we all have people that we interact with, whether it's you leading your team or leading, working with other people in other areas where that's not the case, right?
Sure.
That you want to also manage talent that's not on your own team.
Yeah.
So what are some like operating beliefs that most people have that could limit their ability to manage their talent inside their team or outside their team?
So the first thing that comes to mind is just that talent and success as a leader, as an individual, looks the same for everyone. So, in an organization that, that promotes from within, and there's kind of an image of what that looks like what a leader is, what a talented person is. And I think, just having that ability to encourage growth in maybe strengths or talents that maybe don't necessarily look like the norm, that could be one way, I think, and to, as the leader, to kind of provide some top cover for that to occur, like some permission that they can expand that. And then thinking about people outside of the team, still, I go to knowing the individual and trying to, I'm a scientist, so I like to study things. And so kind of studying the dynamics of an individual or a group and opportunities where, I could see something in someone, and even in a situation where at first it wasn't a great relationship, but I could see some potential. And so making the choice to invest some resources of time and effort into helping that talent to kind of come out and be nurtured and grown in an individual. And then the benefits are paid later when then there is a good relationship and it benefits kind of everyone in the organization.
I think that if you are part of a leadership team on any organization, just do yourself a favor and have a little experiment where you go around saying, what does a talented team may look like here? If you are supervising, if you're writing somebody's evaluation, the question that you should be asking yourself and other people right now, what am I looking for? How do you define talent here at this place of business? And even though you might have them written down in some evaluation system or program, that still doesn't mean the culture knows what talent means for the team, for the organization, or even between supervisor and employee.
Absolutely. I think kind of to back that up is also knowing, like, I have different expectations of what I think talent looks like than my supervisors and their supervisors. So to know that and kind of have a nested approach, so you know what they're looking for. So maybe to highlight the things that they're looking for, or provide that top cover when you're trying to develop something that maybe they might not find as attractive in the moment, but you kind of know that there's promise and that they'll get there. And then for the individual too, just knowing those expectations what people's assumptions are. And then that's come up a couple times lately where, oh, well, I thought that I was supposed to do this, and that's what, I never thought that, it's definitely like have the conversations over and over and over again. And one more thing, just thinking about transitioning in role. So I also have quite a few individuals who are like new into a role. So they've been doing something else in their career up until the point that they came to this team. So helping them to differentiate between like what success looked like and what talent looked like when you're doing this job. And then now you've shifted. So it's a different.
One thing that I think talent is being agile. So you need to be flexible and you need to let go of the things that don't serve you now that used to serve you. This is always repeated. We were talking about this at lunch about how I'm still stuck in old ways that are no longer serving me. So I used to run 3 to 5 miles every day. And 10 years ago, that was awesome for me. It was healthy. It cleared my mind. It was really functioning for all my muscles. And that no longer functions for me as a human being today. First, I don't have time because I've increased my power and my influence and the demands of my days. And second, my body can't sustain it. Like, actually, it's healthy for me to take rest days. And the ways that we can manage our own talent is by looking at what things need to be released, what things do we need to transition towards in order to serve for the growth of the talent. And there's this something called sunk cost right? Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for filling me in. Sunk cost fallacy. And that's when people stay in situations that do not expand them or do not grow them or actually don't even aren't even healthy for them anymore, like investments, relationships, positions, right? Or stay in an organization or go back to things that they know rather than things that they can grow into. So tell us a little bit about sunk cost, because we were actually talked about this in relationship to talent management, to be aware of it.
Certainly. So the idea of sunk cost is that you've put so many resources towards something that regardless of maybe what you know to be true or what you're being drawn towards or what growth could happen, you stick with the old solely because you've already put so much into it. Right. So,
yeah. So I just read, because you said this, how basketball coaches have done this with their talent. Because, you know, basketball coaches really want to hire a star player because that star player seems to have influence over all the other people. And that some of the best coaches are the ones that cut their losses the minute they did not return on their investment. Yeah. And it was seen as cruel. It was seen as like, you know, not going in for the long-term investment. But for these coaches, it almost always enabled them to get fresh talent in that actually served them.
Yeah, so I think it's a fascinating concept. And really, I think as being in the position of trying to help people manage their talent, sometimes it's just knowing that it exists, like that this concept, this bias is out there. And so when we're making decisions about what job to take next or what path to take, being aware of it and making other people aware of it so you can say, so you can question and kind of interrogate, like, is this real or is it, or if I'm just hanging on because it's what I've always done or it's what I've put, you know, I have this education and it's in this topic or this field. So I should stay in that, even if it's actually not what's going to be serving you best and growing what your talents are. And, you know, ultimately in the long term, getting a better investment out of maybe changing it up. So in my experience, it's really just kind of being, knowing that it's there in my own life and then in others. And it's not always to convince people to change path or go the other way or let go of, you know, just cut the losses of all those resources they've put into something. And, you know, sometimes they will decide that is the right thing. But I think it's really important to acknowledge that it's there so that you can come to the right decision and not just blindly kind of go there.
Yeah. You know, at the human level, we think that most talent is always like out there looking for new opportunities and like on the job search or whatever. And oftentimes that's not the case. Your talent out there most likely is underperforming because of sunk cost, meaning they're spending their time and their energy and their, you know, power on things that other people can do as efficiently, as successfully, and you're not getting the juice out of them. So
things that used to work.
So they're no longer growing because they're so successful or excellent. But the point of managing your talent is not to have them do things that they're successful in. It's to do things that thrive. They thrive in and are leading to abundant expansion. So that could be you, listener. I mean, I know that's for me. Like, I'm always thinking like, oh my goodness, like, when is it time for me to not do the things that I do really well and instead do the things that I could potentially thrive in the future. So you have to manage yourself and then give people that model and just ask people, like, do you feel like your talents are being fully utilized and are we expanding you or are we keeping you here stuck?
Definitely. That also makes me think of when you're really focused on the things that you're good at and you have that down. So you're working on that. You have time and resources that you commit to that, and then other opportunities come up. So, one of the other kind of concepts or philosophies in talent management that I like to focus on is kind of the idea of pruning and choosing the things that are most beneficial. And sometimes that means pulling back from some activities or some projects or some commitments so that you can really grow in another area. It's very hard for high performing people who work themselves into more work,
right?
You like do well, and so you get more opportunities. And so it's really hard sometimes to choose the things to say no to or not right now to. So that, and especially on this, and on a team of super high functioning, super high performing people, that is a really big thing for all of us to learn and try to implement in our lives.
Yeah. So just to be clear, pruning is when you decide to cut branches off of a tree or a plant in order to maximize its energy utilization, and it'll tend to grow back more abundantly, more abundant, more healthy if you can actually take off things that might not even look sick, but just you intentionally cut back vital parts of it.
You can be doing them well. You can be doing all these things well.
Right.
Until you're not.
Right. And I read this awesome, like the Patagonia CEO and the founder really was talking about pruning his growth. Like you inhibit growth and development in one area really to maximize the utilization of expansion. So the idea is to help your people say no to things that are not on their top two priority list. And absolutely, management of your talent in this day and age will be providing clear top cover for helping your people not do things outside of these top two things, because they're going to get hit up by other, not other organizations more, but other people around them and other colleagues and other collaborators, probably other team leaders. And it's really important for you to help keep their eye always on the vision and mission of only these two things, and don't do anything else.
I think that's important too, is helping people, yourself, and then helping your teammates to identify and say what those things are. So what really are those goals that your kind of end thing that you're aiming towards, so that when all these opportunities come up, you have something to weigh them against to help and make that decision. Is this going to help me? Is this one of the top one or two priorities that's going to help me get to my goal? Or is this something that's not going to help right now? So that makes it easier, especially for those people who it's really hard to say no. A good mentor of mine taught me this, and it makes it easier because then you can see how it's not really, you're not turning down an opportunity. You're not necessarily closing the door, but you're kind of just letting something pass that's not going to serve you best right now.
Mm-hmm. In this day and age, it takes a team to say this is what the win looks like. And if it's not in this area, that's not what the win is right now. Right now, if you know we get these two things done and there's extra left over and you have a passion and a heart for it, then that's what the next win will be like. I absolutely fundamentally believe that there is a difference between people that prioritize and have deliberate outcomes and can focus on those with so much attention that the other stuff just falls away. And it's not like that other stuff never gets done. There's, you know, who does that?
You're more efficient. You're more efficient if you have the drive and the priorities set. And so you can, you know, light that fire and be passionate for that one thing and get it done. And then you can shift to other things. But yeah, for me, for sure, if I'm trying to do 20 things at once, none of them are going to get done. And if they happen to, it's not done well. But if I can narrow it down, it's better quality. And probably in the end, quantity is more too.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, I appreciate our little conversation. Just some really intriguing nuggets there. And actually some things that I need to go back and do a little bit better.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else you would like to just share before we wrap it up?
I would just say, of course, thanks for the opportunity for me to grow and to definitely be uncomfortable. And to anybody listening out there who has a team, or I mean, if you work with people at all, you don't have to be in charge of the team or in the leadership position to do this. You can see talent and help to create space and guidance and, you know, shepherd people to having better success in what they're doing and what you're doing.
One thing is that we are all responsible for our lives. And I forget this all the time. Like, it is my number one priority in my life to lead my life. And if you're CEO or you're in charge of your team, it is absolutely critical for us to have that leader culture. And every single human being on our team is like a leader. And because you're a leader, I expect you to seek mentorship and seek somebody in your life that has decided to look out for your growth. And that's their number one role that they play in your life, is your professional growth. I think that the day and age of waiting for organizations to come up with their own mentoring programs is outdated. Like, we need to inspire the workforce to say it is your responsibility as a work person to find a mentor and then to give them access, you know, make that available to them. But I absolutely believe that each talented leader out there needs a mentor. And fortunately, I have like ways that and communities that we can develop for people to find comrades and mentors in their own life. So I'll just leave with that. Do you have a mentor that's looking out for your growth and your expansion and your own talent management? So thanks for listening. If you're still with us all the way at the end, I hope that you found something that entertained you and that you can immediately apply to your work life and even home life too. And if you have other needs, go ahead. Yeah, obviously they can email me. I guess I could just say that you can just email me, but I hope that you can find other episodes on the Executive Shaman podcast and check out theLetterCode.com as well. Thanks, Anne. I'm sure we'll have you back.
Thank you. Thank you. Hopefully better next time.
Always. Upward movement.